All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are now chatting with Rick Bensignor. Rick is the president of Bensignor Investment Strategies. Writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors, that is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. And on the retail and individual side, check out the In The Know Trader website. I'll post the link in the show notes on our website, podcast, and YouTube channel. Rick has two products there for the individual trader, a weekly report called The Tactical Trader and a daily report called The Daily Tip Sheet, all of which trying to help navigate what these markets are doing in really a generalist sense. Rick doesn't care what he's trading, just wants to be trading markets that are heading higher and avoiding the ones that are not showing that strength. Rick, I do want to start off with the precious metals correction. Gold and silver have seen a lot of volatility over the last week and one trading day, all starting two Fridays ago. This correction very much called for. Everybody, even the gold bugs, were thinking that a correction was due because of the really euphoric run that we saw in the metals prices and the underlying equities. Now that the correction is here, Rick, as a trader, what do we look for? How do we view and how do we understand what these prices are going through?
So these things have run up so much that actually, if you look at things, let's say in GDX terms, so gold miners terms, and using that as the benchmark for gold miners, the high was precisely what had been the height of a trend channel that it had traded in for quite some time that broke out to the upside. And if you added the height of the trend channel to itself, it's so one way of measuring where an upside target is, precisely where GDX popped. So the pullback from it happening, what was it, last week was the big down day, was not a surprise to see. But I can tell you that I bought silver, palladium, and only because I already have a decent position in gold. I didn't buy more gold, but the same models that got me to buy silver and palladium on the lowest low of that pullback showed up in gold one day later. So I have added exposure on the pullback. I especially like silver long term. I know that once again, we kind of topped out similar to prior highs, but I think it's only a matter of time before silver plays more significant catch up to gold and is also be favored by retail oriented clients because the price is in their heads more affordable. So I think silver, even in the mid to upper 40s, has $60 to $70 silver looking at it down the road. And so on a percentage basis, I still think it's, you know, it's got more to go. No surprise, though, that in and around $50 silver, we got to a little higher in futures. But SLV barely made, I think, a new all-time high. Maybe didn't even do it. I don't have the chart up in front of me. But pullback, yeah, so it made by one day, it made a slight new high. And it's pulled back. And so I'm a happy buyer down here in SLV and, you know, the 44 handle. And I think it's going up. Now, given how price topped and where it topped, I don't think gold just instantly comes back. And it's been kind of tagging along similarly to the S&P in price performance over the years. But I think now you kind of have a top in place where what I'm buying now, I may take some profits on, you know, 10% higher or something like that. And then ultimately play for a breakout to new highs. But that could be down the road. I don't think it's coming immediately.
Well, Rick, just to follow up on silver, it did break out to new highs compared to the 45-year like neckline that it had from 1980 to 2011. So it did get up to $53, $54 on the futures and on the spot. And we get a lot of questions because it's been in backwardation. We're actually, the spot price was between $1 to $3 more than the futures price, a little unusual. And I know you spent so much time as a commodities trader. We get a lot of questions about this, like, what does this mean? You know, people are saying it's a shortage of physical, which I don't know where you fall in that camp, but what do you think about a market that takes 45 years to finally break out to new high, even if it's not as pronounced on the SLV? It was in the spot price and it was in the futures price.
So it's a couple of things. As a long-term investment, it's crappy compared to having put, let's say, money in the stock market. Gold is a different story, but silver, the fact that it took until now to take out the 2011 high and the 1980 high just says to you as a long-term investment, it's not great. And it's certainly not. Now, I bought silver in 2011. Bought SLV, and so I think we got also close to $50 an ounce in 2011. And I bought it too soon. I think I bought it in the, I know I'm long SLV from the low 20s. So I bought it too soon because it went well beneath there, and it's just something I held on to. And now I finally have doubled my money. Doubling my money over 14 years is not a great investment. So the answer is you own this as partially as a hedge, partially because you just like the shininess of looking at some silver, but it's not a great long-term investment. Gold has been a far superior long-term investment. And there's multiple reasons which for that being the case, and I'm not going to get into it just because it's more of a lengthy discussion. And those of your guests who are more, fundamentally oriented can explain more deeply why silver has been capped so much more so than gold. But I think it's that this pullback is a viable pullback. And even if it fell another 10% from here, now we get down to, $40 silver, which is a little more in SLV terms, which is a little more than a 20% pullback, which people say, oh, bear market. I think you want to own this over time as part of your hedge, whether you think of it in the alternative asset space where you own some metals, you own some crypto. I was looking at and trying to guesstimate where the price of gold is going over time. I haven't done it for silver. But I did it for gold recently. And I really had to be kind of creative because any of the targets I've had have already been surpassed. So I had to look at different ways of trying to figure out the momentum and the thrust and where gold can project to over time. And it sounds insane, and it may very well be. And there's no time frame on this call, so it's not like I'm putting this call out to clients and saying buy it because this is where we're going. Because I don't know, I'm in my 60s. I don't know if I'll be alive when it gets to where I think I'm going. But I came up with a number, and I don't have it in front of me, so I don't remember the exact thing. But I know it was somewhere in the $8,000 range per ounce. Again, to me, insane. I used to trade on the floor of COMEX when the thing was trading a couple hundred bucks, to think that, this is what I'm potentially projecting for the price of gold over time is, hard to fathom. But in trying to come up with some reason of why to be a longer term holder, and despite how much it's moved up, how much it still may go, it still could be, a doubling of where it is now. So to me, that means you buy pullbacks and you buy and hold. So you're not going to, if gold pulls off $100, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a buy. But if you've got good tools like I have, because I do much more, let's call it deep technical work than your average technician with models that they don't even have their hands on. And much more institutionally based type of models, not generally available in the public, then there are ways and places that I can identify potential turns and targets. And to me, I will be buying these on pullbacks for whether it ends up going to my kids down the road or I'm alive to see it, but eventually still well higher prices for metals.
Yeah, that is a much higher target, and still sounding like you're playing this very much like a bull market here. Fair enough. Look, it has been a flying bull market now with a little correction. Rick, just want one more question on silver. And we've had some people come on the show. And yes, while silver has broken out from just a simple chart, looking at any price chart, some people are saying the inflation-adjusted price of silver is $100 to $200. And that's where silver needs to go. Should we be paying at all attention to what an inflation-adjusted price would be for any commodity, let alone silver?
Well, I think you can as part of your overall analysis. I wouldn't exclusively look at it and say this is the only way to properly measure it, because most investors and traders, and well, let's stick in the investor category. Forget about traders who are in and out. Most investors aren't looking at it in those terms, and their buy and sell decisions are not based upon adjusting their chart versus the CPI or whatever inflation adjustment you're going to use over time. But in your grand analysis, to disregard that, I think, is missing a piece of the puzzle that should be there as part of how you analyze. So, yes, I think you need to consider on an inflation adjusted basis, where is silver now? Where is it relative to where it's been in the past? And how much more might it go down the road? So the answer is yes, you need to look at it, but not exclusively look at it that way.
Well, Rick, if we just zoom in on the gold and silver equities real quick, you kind of mentioned what was happening with GDX and SIL, and I know you look at the ETFs. The earnings season's upon us for Q3, and the average price of gold, at least according to Newmont yesterday, where they kind of kicked things off after the market, was around 35 and some change to like 35.30, 35.40. The average silver price for the third quarter was around $38. Well, now we're $10 higher than that in silver, and we're a couple hundred dollars higher than that in Q4 as we've kicked off October. Now we're still only about a third of the way through this quarter. But when you look at earnings reports, obviously a lot of people focus on forward guidance, what it's going to look like. But thus far, it looks like we're going to have a lot higher prices. Do you think those kind of things are already factored in at this point when we're still getting Q3 numbers? Or do you think there's the potential for that to be a catalyst where people say, holy cow, these companies are really doing well with revenues. Maybe it's going to be even better for October. Do you look at those kind of factors when you're doing the fundamental analysis?
Yeah, I think in general, fundamental analysts on the street tend to be behind the times and have a historical reputation of upgrading late things that they've missed out on, and often telling people after the fact of what targets are going to be. And sometimes their targets are consistently lower than where something's trading, but they keep moving it up as they're proven wrong. But they won't, if they had a silver target, let's just call it $45 an ounce, and we got to what, 53 or something in front month, and now they'll say, all right, going out 12 months we'll raise it to 50, but they'll probably raise it to 50 when silver's trading 55 or 60. My years on the street, I just think so many analysts are behind, especially in stuff that's not been favored. The public more and more is waking up to alternative assets. Some have never owned precious metals as part of their portfolio. Certainly, many have never owned crypto. And I think you look at these markets and what they potentially could be if you start getting the big brokerage firms saying, yes, you should put X percent of your portfolio in them. And traditionally, many of them said have 3% in metals. Well, what happens if they say, you know what, put 6% in metals and alternatives? How much more inflows that can create for these markets? I also think the white precious metals like platinum, palladium are undervalued. I bought some PALL, the palladium ETF recently. I got clients in just a few weeks ago. I think we got in at 116, something like that, got into the 140s, and I just bought the pullback, this week on the up the low of the move. I think those metals are undervalued. If the shift from electric vehicles continues and you get more hybrids being built, and still to some degree a strong focus on traditional catalytic converter type engines. That's good for platinum and palladium. They had really taken a hit as the whole electric vehicle era came in. And now you see more and more companies kind of backing away from that. So I think those metals, I own palladium and I think it's got a decent run. Don't forget, I don't know, I'm just guessing here. I can't quite remember what it was, but 20 years ago, palladium was the most precious of the precious metals. And then it went, it got killed along with platinum. And obviously not down at the price of silver, but you look at where gold is and you look at where platinum and palladium are and how much they could potentially play some catch up in a scarcity of those metals and increased demand. I think, at this point, do they have a better chance of doubling compared to gold doubling at this point? Probably.
Rick, you mentioned something there that I want to dive a little bit more into, and that's retail investors seeming to have a bit more influence in these markets. We were reading about it really through this year, maybe even into last year, about how retail investors were buying the broad averages, buying the Mag 7, and pushing those markets higher. It really does seem like we got some retail investors that came into the precious metals during this almost parabolic move higher. What is the change that I guess longer term investors need to understand that retail investors have a bit more influence? And how do we see that show up either on the charts or in individual equities if we are focusing on precious metals to know and understand that retail investors still are on side for this trade?
I think it's a combination of several things. There's no one easy way to see what retail is doing. You do get some sense, Schwab often announces it, Bank of America announces it, what's going on the Merrill side. So sometimes you get a sense of what those flows are on the retail side. And that's helpful just in getting a sense of the flows coming from that direction. But yes, you can often see it in the charts, the way things trade, how things trade relative to VWAP, which traditionally was a much more institutional way. And now that VWAP is available to the public through many platforms, I think they're taking some of that edge away from what institutions used to have. And one of the biggest things that was clear this year, and more so than we've seen in a long time, is the influence of retail and their belief that equities were going higher to the tune that they were buyers on the way down in the decline that we saw from the February high into the April 7th low, whereas institutions had sold and profitably sold, but then institutions were much more apt to fight the rally that has taken the market well beyond what were the in spider terms, 613 high from February down to the 482 low on April 7th. And now you're talking about something on all-time high up in the 670s, whereas institutions are lagging this year and many hedge funds are not close to performance of even what the SPY is. So although they look like they were accurate and doing what people pay them to do the early part of the year, you would have actually been better off holding spiders than having a hedge fund trade for you for many of them. Certainly some have outperformed, but there are a ton of funds this year that have not, especially in the multi-pod type firms that, sometimes have dozens, if not 100 or more portfolio managers who trade all across different asset classes and stuff. Those are tending to lag because so many of them fought the idea that this market could actually rally. And you know what? Once we're saying this, let me just switch the conversation for a second from metals to the stock market. So today, SPYs, Qs, diamonds making new all-time highs, and the diamonds have finally hit the target level that I put out in the spring. When I suggested that when diamonds get to a level that they hit today, we are likely going to be at a trading top that few will see or be prepared for. So as the headlines are going to come out of today, an expiration Friday for, options, and the market flying to new high and the S&P up over 60 points, and we're not, we're only halfway through the day, I'm actually selling some of my stock indexes right now that I've owned, through ETFs, because without going into all the details, the same model that in summer, July of 2024, identified where the queues were going to stop, which they did in July, and then fell 15% in the next month before turning around and going higher. When obviously, if the queues fell 15%, all the other stock indexes fell too. Maybe not as much, but they all fell to the 609 spider target that I first started talking about in August of 2024 as when and if the market gets to, you want to materially reduce your holdings for a also double-digit percentage decline. And we hit 609 on December 6th last year. We went sideways for 2 months, printed a high at 613 in February, which was two-thirds of 1% above the target I had put out months before. And then we fell 20% in SPYs and Qs into the April low. And then in the back part of April, I said when the diamonds hit a particular level, which they hit today, we again will likely top. And so I am one of the few probably standing here today saying that I think in the next couple of weeks, we're going to see a 5 to 8% decline across the stock indexes. And that may be not enough for, people to sell out, but I think it's going to be, kind of come out of left field. And you're going to hear it. I'm saying this on a day that if you turn on business television, you're going to hear about how beautiful and wonderful the market is, closing on all-time highs. And I think right here and right now, we are actually at a very precarious place in the market.
Well, Rick, it's an interesting point of view to have just because so many people are overly bullish today on financial media, as you point out. Now, you can understand where people are coming from when they see a market making a new all-time high on the daily and the weekly, to close up a week. And it's looking like it's pretty close to doing that on a monthly, too. So when you look at a market, any market that's breaking out to all-time highs, daily, weekly, monthly, but then counterbalance that across the targets you were just laying out and why there's the potential for a pullback. I mean, help people make sense of that because most people would think, wow, ending the week on a high note is a high note.
And it is. It is. There's absolutely nothing that you're going to see or find that would suggest anything other than what you're saying. It's a high note, it's all-time highs, daily chart, weekly chart, monthly chart, everything, right? All-time highs. You're also at a precarious point from a risk-reward point of view to first put on longs at, Spider 678. Could we go another percent or two? Yes. Do I think we're just going to fly without some pullback first? No, I don't. Even to a simple, if you look at the COVID low, so here, listeners, do this as I'm telling you. Go pull up a chart of spiders and use the function on your charting package that lets you draw a channel. And if you draw your first 2 points as the secular low from the COVID low in 2020, and you connect it to the July 2022 low, the next major low, and then take the highest point in between those 2 points, which is the probably fall. Here, I can even tell you it is the, what month is this? It is the December 21 high. We are right up against the top of that channel, or actually slightly above it, but that means also from a risk reward point of view, to get long at the top of a channel and not halfway down into it or the lower end of it, which you could have done in, on the April low this year. The risk here of first putting on new longs is substantial relative to you making money. So where's the next 3 to 5% if you buy something now? Probably down, not up. And I'm not generally game on buying at the top of a channel. I try to buy weakness, not strength. And there are times strength buying strength works, but right now, right here, not for me.
So, Rick, what's happening in these markets then if we are going to see a general slowdown? We all know that these markets have been pretty strong. Is money flowing back into potentially even bonds as we've seen yields turn down a little bit? Maybe investors are taking at the end of the year a more cautious, less risk on approach.
So here's one of, I'm thinking we get a quick sell-off that will coordinate both with the Fed lowering, look, right now, Fed fund futures players have a 99% chance that Jay Powell is going to cut by 25 basis points next Wednesday. 99% chance, right? So it is completely beyond consensus that he's cutting this coming week. You also have Election Day a few days later. I think that it's possible that becomes the catalyst for a quick decline. Again, 5, 8%, maybe double digits, but I don't think much more than that. And then a turnaround higher again. So, for tactical traders, you're not a buyer up here. For investors, if a 5 to 8% decline, and again, I'm guessing it's a minimum 5% decline across the three major U.S. stock indexes, which are S&P, NASDAQ 100, and the Dow. If 5 to 8% doesn't scare you, then you don't do anything. You don't sell out of anything. You just wait. And then here's the thing that I think is why there's the potentiality for a rally into year end in the early part of next year. There are, if I remember correctly, I might be off here on the number, something like $7 trillion in money market funds. And as the Fed lowers rates and the rates of money market funds kind of similarly drop, there's a point to where people might say, it's not worth getting the few percent of interest. I might as well go and put it into something that, I'm taking some risk, but has a much better chance for return. So, if money market holdings fall from 7 trillion to 5 trillion and 2 trillion comes out, some will go into bonds, probably more on the corporate side than the treasury side, because I don't know if you, unless you're an insurance company or a pension fund, I don't know anybody who's going to want to lock in, what'll at that point probably be something around 3.75% for 10 years. Most people in the public aren't looking to do that, and you get stock market that flies like it does. So you may get trillions coming into more risky assets, which will drive things higher. So potentially that's good for crypto, metal, everything that you'd call a risk asset. So that's why down the road here, I think there's more coming to the upside. And as a second part of that thought process, I don't think everyone's fully in on the AI trade. So even though people are talking about a bubble, I don't think that bubble is ready to burst yet. It may lose a little of its, the balloon may lose a little of its air if I'm right about this impending quick sell-off. And then, it could be similar to what you just saw in the metals, where you just out of nowhere, the day before gold sold off a few hundred dollars, it had closed on the all-time high at the high of the day. There was just nothing to say it was coming. And I think that's the type of thing that's going to happen with stocks. It's not going to be a crash, and it's probably not going to come in one day, but in a string of a few days, you may get several, and in chart terms, candles in a row that you open near the high and close near the low, and then you gap lower and do it again. So I think there is something like that likely coming over the next couple of weeks, especially given that today hit the target I was talking about. And even since we just started talking a few minutes ago, the spiders are off 3 points, which is, S&P is off 30 points off its high. So we're still closer to the high of the day than we are to the low. We're 2/3 of the range off the low, but it's already corrected a bit as we're talking. And I think that people need to be aware of this as far as taking advantage of this impending decline, if I'm correct, that it's coming, to have some bids in the type names you want to own on that pullback. And it's going to be scary to buy them when you do, and you may face, some drawdown, but you may very well be able to buy spiders, 5 to 8% lower than they are now. And names that are high beta type names, the quantum computing names, which are already up several thousand percent this year. We already saw last week how they could make mincemeat out of those quickly. Gold, silver, GDX type names may see, a further hit, but I'd be buying those pullbacks at levels that you feel comfortable buying.
Rick, it's an interesting point about the potential for a short-term corrective move being a good buying opportunity, but then juxtaposed with the point you made about all of those funds sitting in money markets that could come into the market looking for a higher return and maybe fuel the next part of the cycle after that downturn. Just a quick question for you on the sea change we're seeing with financial institutions, at least some of them, shifting from the traditional 60-40, 60% equities, 40% bonds, to this new 60-20-20, and we haven't gotten you to weigh in on this yet. So 60% equities, 20% bonds, and 20% what they're calling alternative assets. So that could be gold or gold equities, but it could also be other vehicles and other instruments they're putting in that are kind of an interesting hedge. What do you make of the move there to kind of de-emphasize bonds, but also emphasize other alternative assets?
I think that the shift, which has started now for a few years, is still early in its change. I think a lot of financial advisors are reticent to make that type move. The average financial advisor is over the age of 55 in this country, so they're going to be more kind of old timers, and I'm in that category, so I'm not making fun of them. Just they're going to be more traditionally oriented, and it'll take a while for them to kind of shift that thought process. I think it's probably the right way of thinking of things. And I'm also longer term not a fan of owning bonds. Short term, sure. Could the 10-year get 3.5% even lower? It can. Do I think down the road that any individual is going to want to lock in that type of rate over time? I don't think so. And other than the aging population, those who are, let's say, in their 60s and older, who do want to reduce some of the risk of owning stocks and therefore buy some bonds. Besides them, the younger crowd, I mean, if you're a 25-year-old, you know what Robinhood is, you know what Bitcoin is, you have no idea what a bond is, and you don't care what a bond is because it's not fun, it's not sexy, and you don't trade them. You take 2 years to make 10 cents in the bond market. It's not a young person's, game to play. And I don't mean play as buy today, sell tomorrow, but just to own. And I think over time, we are not going anything close to what the low in the yields were from back in, what was it, 2020, when we got down to 40 bips or something like that for US 10-year. So we're probably capped at two to, well, I don't know, maybe I'd even say 2.5% best case scenario for bonds, but I think we've turned the corner. The 40-year bull market in bonds is over. So when we peaked in 19, I think 80 or 81 in yields, that 40-year bull market in bonds is over. So we could go sideways for years, but we're not going down to the lows, in my opinion. There's no reason to. And I think ultimately they're going to be a bad investment as rates will head higher over time to more long-term equilibrium, which puts the US 10-year probably in the 6 to 8% neighborhood than the 4% that it is now.
What a change over the last few decades we could be in for, which trickles into a lot of different markets. We'll see how this all plays out. But Rick, you've given us some short-term trading strategies and also some long-term outlooks. So I really appreciate that. And thanks for, again, diving into more of the precious metals, how you're viewing those during this correction after what has been a, I think we can call a pretty historic bull market run. Sounds like we still might be in for some more upside once we digest this current pullback. Again, Rick Bensignor, President of Bensignor Investment Strategies. Also, check out the In the Know Trader website, which again, I will link to in the show notes. That's where you can find all of Rick's retail and individual trading products. Rick, thank you so much for taking time with us on this weekend show. And everyone, thanks for tuning in this weekend. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. And please go back through our website, podcast, YouTube channel. Just search The KE Report. We're also on Substack. That's where you can find all our daily editorials covering market moves and company updates. Everyone, have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.